So early on, right to work passes comes right out of the chute.
Yeah.
And the governor's gonna, you know, the governor's gonna sign it. He does sign it. That's a piece of legislation you worked a long time on. Had to have some pride of authorship in that, didn't you?
I didn't author it.
It was
one of my chairmen.
Yeah.
I let them do it.
But it's a policy you championed.
But I made sure. Well, Governor Parsons, it came out of his committee.
Mm-hmm.
He helped, got it to the floor. We had team effort. We won.
So think back on when you look back on that. It came out very early.
Oh yeah.
I would thought it was a little bit of a hat tip to the Democrats that they didn't make you PQ it. It ran on it. It passed without a PQ. The way it turned out, it gave labor unions a chance to put it on the ballot as sort of referendum to overturn it.
Mm.
Would you have waited a little longer in session to maybe make it harder for them to do that if you had to do it again?
Yeah, probably not, because the ballot initiative would have come the next year. I don't think that would make a difference. No, I think we had an opening. We did it. And
for those listening to this a long time from now, we're talking about this in mid-July before the referendum in August.
Yeah, who knows how that will turn out.
How's it turn out?
Well, if you look at the polling, you're not too excited, but then again, there's other forces that I would hope come to bear that will give the other side of the story. But it is what it is. You know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Do you think that Missouri will be a right-to-work state? It's just
someday,
a matter of when,
someday.
Not if.
Oh, yeah. Competition will demand it.
If you were in the Senate in January, would you pass the bill again, even if it goes down to defeat in August?
If it went down to defeat?
Mm-hmm.
I would make a move to make it statutorily, but I'd probably give it a year to get all my people together. I'd probably give it a breath of air.
So one of the things that I think a lot of the state looked at you on is when Governor Greitens started kind of blowing up these state boards, whether it was the Housing Development Board or the Board of Education. It, as an observer of your career, it looked like going around the Senate with unconfirmed people and trying to enact policies that weren't in statute that looked like the kind of thing that would not sit well with you.
That appointments thing, yeah, that could have been handled better. I mean, when you go against the Senate tradition of the appointments, that could have been handled better. But the Housing Development Commission, we've always had a battle since I was Speaker about what to do with tax credits. And I told you a story about Nixon holding credits for a quarter. And I told Greitens, I said, if I was you, I wouldn't issue any credit and have the tax credit people come and let's negotiate a final outcome. Well, he did. He didn't issue any credits. And I don't know if tax credit people were hollering. They were coming to me. There was beginning a formation of a plan. I never did see what the end result was, but I think this year is going to be the same thing. I don't think Governor Parsons is going to. We're going to meet and try to figure out a way to get the federal credit on some of these, so we can. There's some. We think we can issue that. I think he's right on. But on the other credits, on low income and historic, I think we're going to need some reform, which is the same thing, right? I think. That's correct. I think we do need some reforms on the tax credit. I think Crowell's right on some of those reforms.
So the state of the state this past year,
uh-huh.
The Capitol was buzzing like it, you know, it does when there's these types of things that have happened somewhat often. You're getting ready for the state of the state speech. It had the most bizarre feel of any room I'd ever been in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that was I hadn't been on the dais in the House since I was Speaker. And then I'm going up as, what am I? Am I President of the Senate? Am I Lieutenant Governor of Parsons? I mean, yeah, a lot of uncertainty. And Governor Parsons is, you know, nervous. But, you know, the speech went well, and everything kind of calmed down, and I think he's done.
I'm talking about when you the State of the State speech in January.
Oh, that for Greitens.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was the weirdest room I'd ever been in.
Yeah, that. I thought you were talking about Parsons. I'm not sure what that, because I looked at Keogh after that and said, "What was that?"
So you had heard what everybody else had heard, I'm sure.
I said,
about
what was that? Yeah, damnedest thing I've ever heard. I'm not sure what the point was or where it was going or whatever.
He had a reception in his office, as is somewhat customary. Did you go?
You know, I went. I had an invitation, private reception, to visit with the governor. Walked in there. It was about 400 people in there. I turned around and walked out.
Well, you'd almost have a bizarre curiosity with everything going around in the.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to have a private reception, I thought we might want to kind of get down to basics. I couldn't figure out what was going on, so I just went on to do something else and let the other people congratulate him. And I'd done that before anyway, so I didn't need to congratulate him again.
That night when the story broke, later that night, where were you at?
I don't even remember.
Because it was a couple hours after the speech, I guess.
I don't remember. I was, doing something in the Senate. I have no idea.
So after the story came out, and did the governor reach out to you to try to talk to you about that he wanted to stay and go?
Yeah, and said it wasn't true and this and that. And I said, well, good luck to you. I guess we'll figure it out. And I just when you get into that kind of allegations, true or not, I just figure the process will work through it.
You've watched a lot of politicians, a lot of governors even. You know people pretty well. You know politics pretty well. Did you think he would give another say to the state?
I figured he'd never leave, yeah. I figured his personality wouldn't let him leave. But, the issues got to a point that may or may not ever get out in public, a lot of it, but he needed to go because some of the things that he was doing was, and it has nothing to do with that, with a woman, it was with campaign and movement and that all kind of stuff. I mean, he probably should have left. I mean, it was pretty serious.
I know when you made your public announcement, but I would have a personal suspicion you felt he should resign before you made it public. About when did you think
we thought he would have, but I mean, you don't take lightly calling on someone to resign or at least chastise them. I mean, that's pretty serious, and it's a little heart wrenching. So, but I thought he would sooner than he did, and not let those stuff stack up. And I think Keith and I went to him and tried to convince him. Why put yourself and your family through this stuff and let it work out?
What was that like?
Well. We had a number of people that wanted to take a more forceful approach in the House and the Senate of pushing him out. And, I didn't know if it was true or not. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But there was enough there that I thought after, we were pretty late about calling for his resignation. But after I visited with the Speaker and some of the prosecution and things, we felt it was time. So
when did you go to the governor and suggest maybe saving his family the trouble?
I didn't do that.
You have what looks to me, I think the state knows now, a pretty special relationship with Todd Richardson.
Yeah.
It looks like that it went from a good relationship to maybe something special the last 6 months. Can you kind of give folks an insight into how that relationship became what it is today?
Well, having done his job as Speaker, I knew what he was facing coming in on trying circumstances the way he did. And this is even before with the governor stuff. So I just wanted to make sure. I had some rough encounters with the Senate. I want to make sure that he and I had an open dialogue. And that he wasn't, intimidated is not the right word. He wasn't, with trying to manage a supermajority, that he wasn't going to have to waste time on worrying about a relationship with me. So we just cut through it, and he's great. Very smart. People respect him. He could get. There's a guy that's probably going to move on. There's, we talked about a couple of names, but there's a guy. I thought he'd probably And he may, you know, if Holly gets elected, you know, he'd be a great pick for Attorney General or something.
Let's talk about prevailing wage reform.
Yeah.
Some paycheck stuff. Yeah. It'd be just the tort reform stuff. You really, what was it? Maybe it's a lesson to Mike Parson that if the governor just stays out of it completely, well, tax cut.
Well, we knew what we wanted to do, and I mean, we had it going on both sides. And when the Speaker and the President of the Senate have a common mind, they can move mountains. And a three-legged stool, you have the executive branch gets in the middle of it. I mean, nothing can stop you.
For posterity's sake, in the middle of that session, you had to start at least thinking about preparing a slate of judges.
I did.
How do you, just for history's sake, do you try to balance it partisan, geography? What? How do you go about something like that?
Well, I called a number of judges.
Through history.
I called a number of judges, Dwayne Benton, mm-hmm. Steve Limbaugh, Ray Price, a couple others. There's a lady in Columbia who was on the Supreme Court. I've lost her name right now. And trying to get a sense of what to do on the judges, take the caucus. And I told him what I was doing. Just try to figure out. And then I thought I was going to go to appellate, all appellate judges. You do some in the East, some in the West, some in the South. And then we had to go to the presiding judges of those and see if there's any conflict of interest. And there was, for whatever reason. And some would not, possibly not be able to serve. So then I decided to go to some...
What would those conflicts have been?
Maybe they ruled on some... Something with, in St. Louis, maybe they ruled on something with the governor. Maybe they had a relationship. Maybe they knew him. Who knows? I mean, some they didn't tell me. Said they had a conflict with some of them knowing me, some of them knowing Todd or something, you know. And then so I'm gonna go to the and get some other regional courts. So I kind of had a mix between all different courts and stuff, and men and women, Democrats, Republicans, and then it stopped. I was getting ready to take it to the Senate. And have them look and see what they thought of these names and stuff.
So you had a slate prepared?
I was pretty close to narrowing it down.
And it was appellate court judges?
It was a half appellate, half judicial court.
Would that have been like the senior judge or the senior circuit or whatever?
Not necessarily. What I was, and I didn't really care about politics. I was looking for someone that could make a decision, someone that was going to, the decision was would stand the test of time and firm. And
when you were done, did that list look like a regionally balanced or?
Well, I would have. I never got that far.
Okay.
Because I was still.
What's that? I mean, that's legitimate history.
Well, that's something you stay awake at night.
Yeah.
I have a window in the presence. I call my O window. And I had one in the house, and every time you don't know what to do, I'd go, oh, dang, my old dang window. And I look out and look out that. I asked Todd, I said, which one's your old dang window? It's the same window I looked out of. Because that room, the Speaker's office, is the loneliest room in the whole building. When you got the weight of the world and what he had to go through.
Sure.
And I told him, Keith and I went over there and was going, and I said, now, Todd, whatever you want to do, we'll help you. But keep in mind, you are making history of what people are going to look at, how you handle yourself, how the House handles itself, and what the decisions you're making. Now, if I can help, but I can't make the decision for you, but if I'll be there for you if you need me. And Todd and I talked. If I don't know, maybe every day, sometimes four or five times a day, and Kehoe and Vescovo, I mean, and towards the end, maybe every hour, is the dangest communication effort I've ever seen on leadership on both sides. And that's why we managed to get lucky on the last couple of days and pass many things. But Todd was very respectful of what he did, and those judges, I did the same thing. I talked to him about that, and we talked about the judges. I wasn't going to deal in a vacuum about that, and talked to him about judges, and we both understood that people are going to look at how we handle this and try not to make a mistake. But it's something you lay. I mean, I can't tell you how many times you lay awake trying to make sure if you're guiding that ship, are you making a mistake? Is everything going right?
Let me run through some folks, just word association, something you'd associate with Peter Kinder.
A leader that got us started when he took the majority in the Senate and taught us in the House a little bit, because he was there a few years before us and taught us how to govern.
Jay Nixon.
Kept his word. Started off pretty rocky, but he and I managed to work through that as it should. And
Tom Dempsey.
Yeah, Tom was a really good guy. Everybody liked Tom, and he did a good job. He was the right man at the right time. He was a good president. He was a good majority leader in the House, a really good majority leader in the House, too.
David Humphreys.
Yeah, he's a good community man, and he'll say what's on his mind and follow it up with a checkbook.
Matt Blunt.
Matt was a very circumspect, deep thinker, good to get along with and work with, but he thought through the issues more than he gets credit for.
Dan Meehan.
Dan, he wants everything right now, and circled the wagons. He's very good about grassroots and helping us understand what's on business's mind, and he's a good organizer of that, and he's very well thought of in the building.
Mike Cunningham.
Yeah, Mike Cunningham's sneaky smart. I mean, he was a city manager. He was worked for Coca-Cola USA. That's why I put him in a lot of key chairmanships. I mean, people don't know how smart he really is.
David Barklage.
Oh, the Dark Knight? is probably as good a political mind as ever been in business, and we've worked through a lot of issues. He helped with the majority, and when I was speaker, and yeah, he's
Victor Callahan.
I went to a fundraiser for him. Fred Crackby drew me to a fundraiser for him. I said, Callahan walks up and he says, "What are you at a fundraiser for me for?" I said, "Well, I heard you're a pretty good guy. I come see you." Man of his word, very smart. There's a guy that if you got a debate with him, you better lace up your shoes, because he knew everything about debate and he knew how to do it. He's very smart and very well spoken, and maybe the best debater ever be in the Senate.
Elijah Hart.
Elijah's a soft-spoken guy, but he's got all the leadership qualities and good attorney. I think he's going to do fine. I don't know him that well because most of it was dealing with Todd, but I think he got a good lesson from Todd on how to rule the ship. I mean, you can't go through more difficult times than what the Speaker Richardson had, and I think Elijah was probably it's a good thing that he was there just to watch.
Paul Moton.
Paul, he's worked for different Republican operatives. He's a nice guy and lives around town. His wife's a friend of my wife.
Mike Kehoe.
Kehoe may be the best majority leader I've ever seen. Able to negotiate. Everybody likes him. And he had me being the bad guy. That helped him negotiate. But he's going to be, he'll be elective office. He's got a lot to do. He's a lot to offer. Very well spoken, knows the issues. I mean, it's not very often that you get lucky enough on a leadership that you can look a guy and know what his next move is. And I knew that with Mike. And Mike, and he was able to negotiate Democrats, Republicans, and we had a stellar years under him. Stellar years. I mean, it's to his credit because it was his calendar.
Jeff Rowe.
Jeff and I became friends when he worked for Graves in D.C. and invited me to testify before Graves' committee on business issues years ago. Yeah, I've known Jeff a long time. I mean, the guy is so smart, it's amazing how his company, he's buying companies and stuff. He's very, very a political force that I consult as often as I can because he's very smart.
Jay Wasson.
Yeah, Jay's my buddy. Yeah, I'll tell you some stories about him. Some of them I can tell you on the screen can, but a good, solid fellow. Everybody loves Jay. That's why I had him work on my campaigns and get my leadership races. He was my vote counter and put together a team. He's as loyal as a human being ever was, and he and I are very close.
Eric Schmidt.
Eric's another guy. He's a great economic development chair and understood some synergy in St. Louis when he did Senate Bill 5 and had to do something. Because I used to raise Cain about driving on the Interbelt, coming by through Shylock and have to go down to 30 miles an hour so he wouldn't get the, you know, on the North Interbelt, get that ticket.
Yeah.
And we were kidding about that. I mean, there's another guy that's going to go a long way. Very smart. You know, when he had his son there and he was talking about some of that oil that might help his son for the cannabis oil. I mean, I'm another good debater, but I've never heard, there was not a dry eye or a pin drop on that debate. It still resonates in that hall. I mean, if you listen quiet enough, you can hear people in the past debate, but you can still hear Eric Schmidt talking about his son that day.
Gina Walsh.
Yeah, Gina's a good partner. She has got a tough job minority, but she's keeps her word and works through the issues and very well thought of. She's probably passed as much legislation as some Republicans. We had the one before her, Kevney. He probably passed more legislation than Republicans because he had so much trust. Because he was a trust attorney, he did all of our trust bills. We go to Kevney, and bang, bang, bang. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's some things we're proud of. And Gina did some things on some education, on some business issues. That
Rob Vescovo.
You know, I don't know him as well as Kehoe did. I spent most of my time with the speaker, but he reminds me of me. He'll tell you what's on his mind. But he appears to be, you know, very well managed, well organized, wants to win. I like that.
Speaking of Jefferson County, what about Ryan McKenna?
Oh, McKenna, he's a good one. Him and his dad both. Yeah, McKenna was not very partisan, and he was easy to work with, and just a nice guy. I think he's lobbying now. Yeah, for junior colleges. Yeah. Junior college, that's the kind of guy they need because he gets along with everybody. So they'll do.
I think he also has the best Ron Richard impersonation of anybody in the Capitol.
Well, I'm not sure what that was, but...
He'll do an impersonation of you sometimes it's good enough that it's respectful, you know.
Well, yeah, I did one of him when he was over there and with some of his Irish brethren. And we've had a pretty good time.
Caleb,
a nice guy.
About Caleb Browden.
Yeah, that's an upcoming star. He's, you know, he's very smart, and he's a nice young guy. He's got a bright future. I think he'll be in leadership of the Senate for a long time.
Rob Mayer.
Rob, he was a better pro tem than people give him credit for, based on how he was elected. But he did okay. In the House, he was a chairman, did a great job. I think he chaired one of the public safety committees. But he was an advocate for the Boot Hill and rice and farmers. And I mean, I'd do anything for him. I think he's done a great job as a judge, and I think that's what he likes doing now.
Eric Greitens.
Yeah, it's just too bad having that much potential and you have a goal and get caught up in whatever you got caught up in. It's just too bad. I mean,
just end up with a couple questions going forward. What's left to do besides maybe get Todd to quit smoking?
Oh, well, I mean, he'll do that someday. There's plenty to do. I mean, we've still got some higher education funding issues we got to work through. The best thing, what's left to do? I guess to to exit on a positive note, that we did the best we could. And like Winston Churchill said, when he exited, I gave it blood, sweat, and tears, and I did the best I could. So I'll leave it with that.
What's more challenging, being the Speaker or the Pro Tem of the Senate?
Probably the Speaker. You have a bigger number. You have more control because the budget starts there. Next to the governor, you know, the Speaker is the most powerful person in that building.
Speaker more enjoyable?
It's always enjoyable when you have the concentric power in your hand and you can move and not have to have a consensus. Because you're already elected by a consensus, you can do some things that's you can't do in the Senate because you have to work towards a negotiated settlement sometimes. Sometimes the House, you've got to ram it through.
How should the PQ be used going forward? What was your thoughts when you sat down to think about using it?
Well, is it necessary? Is all the other venues been tried? Is the opposition not giving deliberate debate on the issue, just trying to kill time? And is it of enough of importance to the majority that they think you want to do it? And does the majority realize there's consequences after that?
Going forward, what are some things people can do to maintain the traditions of the Senate? It's kind of safeguarded the state for a long time.
Well, you know, it's not too tough. All you have to do is walk in the hallways and look at all the people you stand on their shoulders and there for some reason. And all the rules of the Senate and the House are there for a reason. They're built upon them. We haven't changed that many of them, modified very many of them. Just pay attention to how you got there and read the rule book. That's power in the House and Senate, know the rules.
What was your view of Trump when he was running, first started running?
I thought, who's this Yahoo? I said, but I tell you what, he struck a chord. Yep. I mean, in Missouri, and he still is. I mean, he gets away with saying crazier things than I do. So,
what's your view of Trump today after seeing him as president for a year and a half?
Well, you never know what the guy's going to do. I will say the economy's in a tear, but I wish the tariffs would have been handled this a little bit better. I hope there's being in leadership, you know that when you say something, you may be driving, again, some for theater, some for negotiation. You got to believe there's something going on behind the walls. You hope it works out. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that we've been treated unfairly on some of the trade deals. But putting our manufacturers and farmers at risk, I hope that doesn't go much farther.
So if there was a person starting in local government like you did are going to come to that Capitol for the first time in January, what piece of advice would you give them?
Walk the halls. Understand that when you come in there, it's a hallowed room for debate and for negotiation. And if you think you're going to change the world, you're not, because it takes 17 in the Senate, more with you, and 81 with you, and you better figure that out pretty quick, and figure out who your friends are. Because if you don't, and you side on the wrong side and make some silly decisions, or don't show up to vote, it harms you forever.
So the last question, this was suggested by a former governor that thinks very highly of you. How would you summarize your career in just a couple sentences?
Very lucky.
Senator Richard, I want to thank you. It was an honor to get to talk to the people I got to talk to prepare for this. It was an honor to be in your office. And as Peter Kinder said, I love history, but you're a historic figure in Missouri history, and I'm very honored that you sit down with us.
I'm glad you guys came down. And again, it's always a pleasure, and I hope we had some fun. And I'm not as bad as everybody seems, you know. I try to sometimes, but I'm pretty serious at what I do when I'm in leadership. I understand that you're there for a reason, and it's not fun and games. I mean, I'm not out chasing girls, and I'm not drinking. I haven't had a drink since I was elected.
Really?
No. I take that back. Maybe I had half a beer a month ago at home. But no, because I don't want to disrespect those institutions by me doing something stupid. I'm capable of saying something silly anyway without having, and some of it is warranted, some of it I shouldn't have said. But no, I looked at what's happened to a lot of people in the past, and I'm not going to go there, and I want to model myself after a lot of people's been there, and I hope it's, I can be looked at in some light of he did a good job, did his best.
Senator, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, Scott, it's always a pleasure.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the Missouri way of life. We're for worrying less about the what-ifs and more about the why-nots. We're for checking off your bucket list and then making a new one. For starting a family, a business, a tradition. And if you find yourself starting over, we're here for that too. We're for building a life in Missouri and then going out and living it. And when it comes to making sure everything you've built is protected, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance.
The Show Me Missouri podcast is brought to you by our friends at HALO, Heartland Area Landowners. HALO is a membership-based organization for folks interested in farming the sun and the wind. HALO members are passionate about their land, our world, and stewarding the resources that feed America, power, and its economy. Farming the sun and wind has incredible benefits for farmers, landowners, and all Missouri communities, all while helping secure America's energy independence. To learn more about HALO and how you can get involved, visit heartlandowners.farm. That's heartlandowners.farm.